people with paper. Yeah, you can. The quality of this type of coding isn't very important because I'm not going to do anything with it. Now, first of all, let us make this clear that I'm not keeping these tapes. I won't, and I'm going to wipe them, and I'll only use any part of them that you say I can. Okay. And I never argue about it, you see. So it's not going to, you can say anything you fancy. But, well, the idea, what I talked to Peter and Malcolm about, Peter and Ned about, was just, you know, we just talked around work and whether they liked it and what they didn't like about it and you know, what they do if they won tats. Peter would keep on working.
Damn me. Okay, I don't know what
that's about. Yeah, well, about work. I don't mean...
Oh, I see.
You see, as far as work's concerned, Peter would keep on working because it's his social life.
That's right, yes.
And Ned would stop and make a great film to alter the world.
Or at least he'd sit back and he'd buy himself a typewriter and start
writing. Yes, that's right. Ned wants to use it to, would use it to give himself power.
That's right.
And not power, I mean more influence, you know, so he thinks people would listen to him more.
Now, Frankie's eyes were getting worse, not every month, particularly every week, Frank. And I used to take him home.
Malcolm X's brother.
Oh, Jim Smith's brother,
yeah,
wasn't he?
Yeah. I used to take him home, like in the car or something like that, get him right inside, and if it was on night shift, which was very hard, we'd sit him under a light. That's, and the work would go on just the same. And Frank was a good bloke, you know, Frank was a do anything for anybody, you know, and if he had a bit of his full sight and vision, it's surprising what he would have done, and could have done, you know. And
the gang carried him.
He committed suicide.
Yes, he committed, yes.
How old was he?
So not very old, was he?
I would suppose he'd be in his...
He'd be about
40, I suppose.
Oh, and he couldn't cope with being blind, didn't he?
No, well, on one occasion, down at Yarraville on the Sugar, he threw himself into the side net. He thought it was the water.
Thought it was the water?
Yeah, and threw himself... He's landing in the side netter. In the side net, like, you know, the side net on the side of the ship. Yeah, tried to drown himself.
Gee. And if... I mean, you wouldn't take a bloke like that into your gang, but if a bloke in your gang, you know, became feeble or anything like that.
They would do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You'd take a bloke like that.
Would you?
Yes.
Would you have taken a bloke like that in?
You always carried one dead one like that if it was necessary, didn't you? You could afford to carry one because the others done the work. And young Ian, up near my place, he was a kiddie. They bought him a wristwatch, but it used to embarrass him. Somebody had asked him the time, and he couldn't tell it, you know.
Yeah.
Charlie Young's old gang, they put him into
99. 99, yeah.
Well, it used to be funny how that gang used to look after him. Like, they'd go up and they'd go into the pub when they'd finish work, and young Ian would have to stop outside in the car. You're not coming in, you stop there.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. And he used to go and get the belly, and they looked after him like a baby.
When would this have been, Tom?
Well, I reckon young Ian's been on the wharf 20 years now.
He's still there?
Yeah, oh yes, he's still there. I think he's down at Webb Dock now. Of course, he's well matured now as far as the work. But when he first started there, geez, they used to look after him.
A bit backward, was he?
No. He's a good kid, but his father was a seaman, and his father said, I don't want him to get into a gang of boozers and, you know, get put on the wrong track. So we said, all right. He approached me and I went and seen Charlie's old gang, Charlie Young's. I said, you've got a vacancy there. And I told him, this is sending me.
You'd think, wouldn't you? Well, in the bull days, would that have
been? I only illustrated that to show you this is the kind of thing, like, you know. You'd have somebody like that and you'd say, oh, what's the name gang? I'll look after them.
Well, you see, so someone like young Bill Dredge, who they knew from the very beginning couldn't do the work. Yeah. Now, would they take him in to oblige his father, sort of thing?
Well, yes, so traditionally, yeah. Because they knew his father and knew, you know, his family. Well, then, it wasn't long before he became the assistant secretary.
Of the union?
Mm.
Oh, I see.
Is he...
So you don't hear it at all, eh?
Oh.
What did you leave school when you were 12 for?
Well, it's like everything else. You just couldn't get you had to get a living somewhere, you know, and you couldn't get to school.
Well,
and
you were born in 1919. You left school when you were 12. That's 31.
31, yeah. I sold papers in town for a few years, you know. And, of course, it was like everything else. I went to work in a foundry, and I was getting 16 and fourpence a week. the old Lux Foundry in Brunswick, and they come to me one day and they said, "We're sorry, son, there's a wage drop. Your wages have dropped to 15 and fourpence." So I said, "Well, that's it." I said, "I'm finished." And they said, "You can't afford to be finished." Like, I said, "Yes, I can." They said, "What are you going to do?" I said, "I'll be on the track next week." I said, "I'll be snatching grapes."
And was that you couldn't live on that money? I mean, even those days.
It was ridiculous, Wendy. You know
what
I mean? I was paying
12
and 16. I was paying 16.
In today's spending.
$1.65 it would be approximately.
Yeah, but in spending power, about a bob, like, you know, if you went in different, yeah, but you still wasn't the living. It was about a quarter of what the dollar.
I was going to say how much you paid out
yeah.
of that.
Yeah, sorry,
I paid 12 and 6 a week board.
At home?
At home.
That probably didn't keep you either.
Well, I would then those
yeah,
days.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty tops in those days.
Yeah,
it was the best,
that'd be
you
a
know.
Good board, wouldn't it?
Yeah, if I never rode the bike to work, I wouldn't bother to have got there.
Mm.
To Brunswick from Carlton.
Was it hard work?
Well, I was wheeling castings all day.
Foundry?
Yeah.
You know what, in a wheelbarrow?
In a barrow, yeah. All day, and then on a Friday you had to clean out the fitting shop. I mean, which would be a job on its own, I reckon, in about a week, you know, a week's work on its own in the day.
Now, that'd be 31, 32, that would have been the Premier's plan wage cuts that you were getting then in, probably, would it? No, that was when you were 16. That was in the mid-30s.
That's right.
In the mid-30s,
yeah.
When you were about
35. About 35, mm. Yes. Yeah, I sold papers till about 1934, mm. To the centenary year, you know. Then I just thought, well, it's about time I'd try to get a job somewhere. There was no future in selling papers, like, you know. And,
Were you better off selling papers than
you
were?
Oh, a mile in front. Yes. Oh, well, I tell you, I think there was that many perks, like, you know what I mean, around the town. You could get a bob either there, like, you know. I even worked for a fellow that used to tune the organs at the old Capitol and the State and the Regent.
What was his name?
He come from Coburg.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I used to get $5 a week. And I used to go in there and I used to look in the books that they used to write, leave on the side. I couldn't remember his name, Tom.
Go on.
And I'd look at the book to see if something was wrong with the clarinet or something like that. And if it was very bad, I'd get on the phone and give him a ring. And then he'd come. He got £10 a week then. And it was quite good, like, you know. Then while he was upstairs in the organ room, in the pipe room, I'd be running over the keys. And, you know, he was singing out, like, you know, "Oh, That Note" or something like that. And it was extra good, you know, it was great. And, of course, I give that away too, like, you know, but you seem to be able to pick up more.
Yeah, well, Alf Edwards, who was also in the Depression book, he said that he used to sell papers. You used to go and get them, just buy them at the Herald, and
oh,
you didn't
yeah.
have to have a special beat or anything. You didn't work for anyone. You bought them wholesale and sold them retail.
Yeah.
And he used to go busking outside the Princess Theatre, you know, and sing
yeah,
songs.
That's
and
right.
Interval
yeah,
time.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. I've done it myself.
Have you?
In the cathedral, end of the arches there, in the cathedral,
yeah.
just off Little Collins, Flinders Lane.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've even there. My mate had the Wildman had the mouth organ, and I used to do a bit of busking.
What did you sing?
Oh, don't ask me.
Is that long? We are the only animal.
Pennies from Heaven, I think, was the name of it. Things were that bad. I sold papers for W.J. Carroll, the straw hat kid and the sentimental bloke, if you remember him.
Yeah, yes.
Of course, I think they all done it for nothing, that picture. They all had a little bit in it, like, you know.
Mm. They wouldn't get
no, he was the straw hat kid. I don't know if you remember seeing the old picture, like, you know.
Oh, I see. Well,
yeah.
he was is that Garnet, is that what was he made the film, or was he the star of it?
Was,
or?
No,
the
straw hat bloke was one of the characters in it. Just
like there's what was the name of the names now, the leading couple.
I see. So that was that you were actually picking up a living in town, selling papers and doing odd jobs.
Yeah.
The time you were 12, when you were 15, 16.
Yeah, stale cakes.
That's right.
In a Black's Cafe for a crumpet with a bit of butter on it for tuppence.
Remember
or something.
The George Inn up at the top?
I remember the George Inn.
Yeah.
Remember them all. I could replace Berg Street for you.
That's right.
That's right.
Taxi drivers went to the George Inn.
Yeah.
Oh,
that was a great Cobbs, and you know, old Cobbs up there, and Sidney Jackson's organs in.
Was he in the Newsboys?
I used to go up the club sometimes.
Yeah.
Sung in on
Edith
on
Yeah. And Dot used to work in with the Wild Cherry Cafe in Collins Street.
Nice work, Wild
Cherry. That was very flash. That was open during the Depression.
Flash where you worked.
I can always remember there was a young fella who used to sell papers, Charlie Smith. Him and his brother used to take their father to North Melbourne to the footy every Saturday. He was blind, and they'd lead him down Arden Street. And I reckon they were the greatest supporters North ever had. And Charlie got pneumonia on the Saturday, still went to the game in the pouring rain with his father and his brother, and was dead on the Monday. Yeah.
Well, he was a kid, was he?
Mm-hmm. He was he was apprenticed one time out at Flemington, but he got into Holtz with old Scobie. You know, then the time they bought that ringer. Remember that ringer, Red Lock?
Yeah.
Well, they had that in the door in the shop in Bourke Street next to the old Bijou. Sixpence to see the ringer. I'm looking everywhere for Charlie, see? So I'm going down Bourke Street and there's this bloke outside with the jockey silks on and everything and the whip. And he's got the mask on. And I thought to myself, gee, that's Charlie. And I sidled over, you know, and I said, that's you, Charlie. He said, shh, don't say nothing. He said, I'm getting a quid of you. He said, I'm the jockey that rode this horse in all its races. And they took him inside and set him up. And when they got about 20 or 30 in there, like, you know, it's only a bit of a shop, you know.
Yeah.
And they'd set him up, and this is the jockey that rode him in all these races. Angus was that fella at the pub in the opposite the Flagstaff. Percy Lennon. And he said, this is the jockey that rode him in all his races. He said he'll give you a description, what he done and everything like that.
Listen, what was the ringer?
That was Redlock, Herbie, Crybean, Sir Difference. That's the names that raced under.
Oh, I see, they rang it in various names.
Yes. It was just before that time the Solomons rigged the wires, you know. I think it was on 3XY or one of those stations.
Yeah, wires to get the baton.
Yeah.
Oh.
But,
hang on, I'll see how...
Fantastic voice, Tom. And they'd say, sing us a song, Charlie. There'd be Kitty Blewett, Gus Blewett, all the Blewetts and that, you know. And Charlie would start singing. And before you knew where we were, he had 30 bob, which was a lot of money in those days, you know. They'd throw in, like, you know, 10 bob or something.
Now listen, getting back to the war.
Yeah.
Now listen, you came home from the army, from the war. What division were you in?
I was in the 8th division.
In the 8th, you went through some troubles then?
Well, I never got away, Wendy.
Didn't you? Did the 8th get away?
I never.
Oh.
No, I was in the 4th anti-tank unit and regiment, and I got discharged with... medically unfit, like.
I see.
You know.
So when did you go on the wharf then?
I went to the wharf around just in late 40.
Oh,
late
40s. I see. Yeah. Oh, you didn't go during the war. You went after the war. I see.
Oh no, I was there during the war.
On the
wharf. Yeah.
I see. Okay. Well, what was it like? What was it like? Yeah. How did you get on the wharf?
Well, I
near wharf is in.
Yeah. No, I started off as a blank. And I sat out in the front there with about 7 others for a week. And I was going, I was only a blank, I wasn't a blank, I was nothing. I had nothing.
Never had a license.
And I was nearly broke by the time old, what's his name? He used to run the compound, you know.
Braddock.
Joe Braddock come out and he said, I want 8 men for 6 o'clock start on the Canberra, 5 North. And I was the last one that he'd give a ticket to go up to the Market Street to get a security pass. Because you had to have a security pass. And I was the last one because I probably thought I should have been in the army, like, you know. So up we go and we get the security pass and we start at 6 o'clock start on the Canberra at 5 North. And then back again the next morning, 8 o'clock.
What time did you finish?
Oh, you'd work till 10.
10.
No, 9 in the river. 10 in the river, 9 at
that's right.
That's
10.
Right. 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah,
you didn't work through, you didn't work at midnight.
Oh no, the only time I ever worked through was on the coal, Wendy, when we used to work the 24-hour shifts, you know.
Yeah, well tell us about this, how you came in, and then you got, how long were you in the blanks?
You had to more or less get a reference from a foreman for a say-so, to say how you'd gone on the job, like, you know, to get yourself a second preference. I think I was only in the blanks a couple of weeks, like, you know.
Well, what time this must have been before the gang system.
Oh, yes, yes. The gang system didn't come until 42.
Oh, so you were there early in the war.
Oh, yes,
you
yes.
were there
I
early
was there.
In the war.
I was in the army about 12 months. Over 12 months.
Ah, well, and that's because I was starting to think that our friend Louis was mad because he said you'd been in all the system, all the area, you know, you'd been in before the gang system. Well, you
weren't. I was there before the gang system.
I see. So even in the war, even early in the war, when there was plenty of work, you might be without work for a week.
Yes, no worries at all, even in the seconds. Even in the second preference. The second preference, well, you got a reference, and then you applied for your second preference ticket, which was around shaped like a football, you know. And I suppose at the time there'd be 300 second preference there. And then the work was divided between the PNC and the WWF, and what was left come to the second preference, and what was after that went outside to the blanks if there was any available.
And when did you join the union? Couldn't join the union until you got a second preference, or how did it work?
I found it very hard to get into the union.
Why did you join the PNC then?
No, I couldn't. Sorry, but I wasn't going that bloody bad, to tell you the truth, like, you know. And when you realised what these fellas had gone through, at the time, the Federation was only just starting to get its muscle back, you know? They'd been through a pretty rough time. And the opportunity, through the war, had just given them a chance to reassert themselves. Anyway, getting back to the second preference, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I became a member of the second preference. There were 300 members in the second preference, and there could have been more. There could have been 400. And what happened was the government brought in, they want men of the age to form the CCC. That was the Civil Construction Corps. And they were going to take them from out of the second preference. Well, they're going to take them off the waterfront. And they went through them, and the people that were left, I think, could have been about 250. And they were going to make the second preference first preference. They were going to be given a first preference. Now, at the time, there was no way in the world, only a limited number could get into the WWF. And they decided that they were going to make them first preference, give them the same preference as the other two bodies. Yeah, that's the PNC and the WWF. And even Jim Ely could see that he would have 250 men with a first preference unattached, which would be no good to any union. So that was the time when they were told if they got a nominator and a seconder, they could become members of the WWF.
Can I interrupt for a moment? Well, would this, Healy would be having trouble with the Melbourne branch, would this, because Healy would have always believed in taking him into the Federation, did he not?
No. Healy's main contention at this time was to get rid of the PNCs.
But he wouldn't want all these men floating around.
But then when, as Bert just explained, when there's a possibility of a second preference getting a first preference and becoming a body of men. Was you there, Bert, when they called a meeting at the Temperance Hall, some smarties on the waterfront, and they were going to form another union
of
the second preference?
And I was thinking of the fellow's name that was going to organise that.
Yeah, bloody smarties.
Yeah.
Terry Dean and I went up and addressed
them. Yeah, I can just remember that. I just can't think of the names of the people that were going to do
smarties.
It.
Smarties. They were ripping money off the second preferences at that time. And they were going to form them into the union because the Federation wouldn't.
I don't know if that, what's the name, that Bertie Clark had anything to do with it, did he?
We've got their names, Tom, on the tape somewhere.
Oh, I can remember
that.
That
was
Martin
Brothers.
Yes,
The two Martin Brothers.
Oh, yes,
all that gangster, Harry Summers and people like
crap
with the waterfront.
I see, so the war coming in didn't change everything on the waterfront. I mean, a lot of the second preference business still went on, and there's still out on the
States.
Yes,
that's right. But things were still bad in 1940. Like things, since the war started, there wasn't prosperity. It couldn't be.
We never got any money on the waterfront until after the war, did we, Bert? Real money.
Big money come up with a bit of a rush, you know. But all you ever got in the way of big money there was the hours you put in and the overtime you worked. you weren't that much in far in front of the ordinary worker.
You had to put long.
And the conditions you worked under, the lamp black, with the only gear that you wore was the clothes you wore yourself, and then they begrudgingly give you about a shilling an hour.
What was lamp black like to work?
Oh, lamp black was unreal. It's lamp black. You could wash yourself. You could wash yourself on Monday and it'd still be shining. You'd still be shining on Saturday.
You couldn't come into a house.
No.
Into the bathroom. You'd strip it outside.
Oh, outside for sure.
You'd strip outside and come in that way.
How did you handle it? Was it a bulk cargo or in bags?
Oh, in bags. But not a strong bag, like, you know,
paper bag.
Like, well, you know, it's the cheapest of bags, like, you know. In fact, I said to an officer there one day on the ship, I said, why don't you put this stuff in the drums? He said, it'd be uneconomical to bring it here. He said, you would get here, your dirt hour rate of a shilling an hour or something like that. The people that handle that in South America and all that, that was be their wage. That'd be their day's wages, rental listed, and they said they'd revel in it. He said that's why they're prepared to take whatever chance they got here.
Yeah.
Like, you know, in respect to that.
And was that blank a common cargo? Was there a lot of it coming?
Oh,
it
was a
you
fair
know what
bit.
It's used for? The tyres, the black tyres.
Carbon. That's
carbon black.
And there'd be a lot of it, would there?
There's
the
enough.
The regular cargo.
There's enough there to make you sick of it, Wendy, I tell you.
They make it here.
Yes. Down, this is where these people are locked in down here.
Yeah.
Oh, Union Carbide.
Yeah.
Union
Carbide. That's it.
So really, you still weren't in casual on. I mean, it was only fairly off and on labour on the wharf during the war. I mean, you wouldn't be sure you were going to work every day.
Oh no, that's for sure. You could get a 10 o'clock start at 21 Victoria Dock. And down had come the rain at 1 o'clock in the morning. That's it, cover it up, get home the best way you can to West Melbourne by foot. They would hold your docket to 1 o'clock the next day for a recall for that same job, and that same thing could happen 3 or 4 times during the week. Possible.
You never stood dry in the rain.
No.
They sent you out and they held your docket and you had to
want to
find up that re-employer.
Whether
well,
you
meantime.
Ring up with you and find out or would you?
Well,
you
no, you had to go down.
You had to be there.
Oh, you had to be there 1 o'clock for recall.
Oh, I see.
That
recall
job.
At 1 o'clock, they'd take you there.
Mm, I see.
And if it's still raining, you'd be going again.
Yeah.
What was the hourly rate of the stump? Remember?
About two and five pence or something.
Like that, yeah.
25 cents a day.
Well, that was only £4.
I think it was
about
a pound a day.
Yeah,
that's only the £5 a week.
That's about all, yeah.
Yeah, well, that was what the ruling rate, and that was, it was about the same as if you worked in a factory, I think.
Yeah.
We were never well paid in Wharfish, were you? It's the hours we put in, wasn't there?
Well, they said, like, they always put down, which was the worst thing that ever happened, was working Sundays on the waterfront. But the union made it that way as a deterrent by telling them that they wanted double time and a half.
They nearly got a shock when they agreed.
And they agreed to it, and they were still making money on Sunday at double time and a half and paying them nothing during the week. But that was only a deterrent.
I see, so the union never expected them to come at double time and a half.
No. Sunday work come up in that discussion with the ship owners, he said, I'll stop them.
That's right.
He said, 2.5 times the ordinary rate. And they said, all right.
He
bought it to stop them from working Sundays.
The thing after my sister in Canning Street came in was because they couldn't get labour for day work.
Now, this is why the gang system came in.
This is in my... Jim Henley had to come here and he had to tell them that this had to be done. They couldn't get labour because the hours were so long, the pay wasn't that good. There was no chance at 10 o'clock in the night going anywhere if you worked till 10 o'clock. And the position was that fellas were going for the midnight, the 10 o'clock start or the midnight start, so at least they'd have a couple of hours to themselves during the day.
Now, and also penalty rates, would you? Were there penalty rates?
Yes, they got penalty rates.
How much was the penalty rate for night time?
Oh, I think it was double then, wasn't it?
I think time and a half.
Time and a half was midnight, was it then? Yeah.
And what? How many shifts were there? Two or three?
Just two shifts.
Oh, you never had the twilight?
Oh, then the midnight. No. Three shifts.
No, first was the two. The eight
or nine.
Nine till seven in the morning.
That's right. That's
then,
right.
Then oh, we yes. got the, when they were introduced to Twilight, remember that we had one hell of a struggle to get it into Melbourne because the Warpies were resisting it.
That's
when
right.
it wouldn't
yeah.
get a living.
Yeah.
Every change on the waterfront, yeah. we had a alien that had a hell of a job to change
5
it.
5 to 11. Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you have managed to change the time if it hadn't been for the war, do you reckon? Would it have been... The war actually changed
oh, yes.
a lot of things on the
oh,
waterfront.
Yes.
Ely was able to drive concessions off the, on the war because of the war. See, he gives some things away for better gains, wouldn't you say, Bert?
Yeah.
You see,
yeah.
This is Bert's interview. Like Idle Time,
yeah.
they said he's bloody mad.
Yeah.
What's he talking about? They won't pay Idle Time minimum engagement payment.
6-hour engagement. Like, it was unreal, like,
unreal.
You know.
Was this during the war or after the war?
No, this was during the war.
I thought minimum engagements came in after the war.
During the war.
Yeah, I was always opposed to the fact that you could go to work at 8 o'clock in the morning and you could knock you off at 12 o'clock and you got 4 hours pay for the day.
Mm.
Practically amounted to may as well be stopping home or something like that.
The minimum engagement used to be 2 hours in the Depression.
Originally.
And then it went up to four.
Then it went to three.
Then
it went to four.
Then six.
Six.
So
six
this
hour.
Is your
I think,
time. You've got a 6 hour.
In my opinion, one of the greatest conditions there was one on the waterfront through Jim Healy was a 6 hour minimum. That was unreal in a casual industry
yeah.
to get a 6 hour minimum. Yeah.
And what about when did waiting time come in, Tom?
Well, that was
waiting time.
No, waiting
yeah,
time
no.
came in.
Idle
time. Waiting time came in of a Sunday when they requested to go to work of a Sunday. And you'd start working, and the rain had come down at 10 o'clock, and you'd go back onto ordinary time. So that meant that you could get 2 hours at double time and a half, and the rest of the 6 hours at ordinary time.
Mm.
So
and that was the next battle for that one.
Yeah, so, you know what I mean.
And you were a little one. You couldn't go on strike during the war. There wasn't much strikes during the war, were there? Did you have
yes.
any strikes?
Oh, yes, we had strikes. We had protests. We had
yeah.
one-hour stoppages. We the voice was always heard, like.
But I understood that the union sort of didn't have big strikes. I mean, you did hold down wage demands.
We never had long strikes. We never had prolonged strikes. We might stop the port for 24 hours or something
yes.
like that if it was serious enough.
What sort of thing would be serious enough?
But then we also had people in office who wasn't prepared to do that. The clerks and that I'm talking
yeah.
about. You know,
yeah.
What sort of thing would be serious enough to stop a port? You
what?
Remember it? Wait a minute, Tom.
Oh.
As you just said, what's an example of
what? Well, the conditions that they try to force on you, like unrealistic things, like less men on the job. Well, not less men on the job, but bumping up the workload of trying to, instead of putting 5 or 6 bales of wool in a sling, they try and send in 8 or 10 with less men. And things like that, and
would this be just the foreman?
And of course, you'd have a stop.
Oh,
this would
be
the
foreman just trying to.
Well, the foreman are right, they're getting a direction from the company,
yeah.
and it's company direction.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the sort of things they'd do. They'd antagonize, you know, even though you had to put something in for the war effort. The war effort wasn't considered much by the people that were running the ships, because they'd do everything in the world to antagonize you. You'd be going to a freezer, for instance. At 6 degrees, and all you'd have was the clothes you wore yourself. And then if you worked in a freezer, you get a smoko. If you worked there 2 hours, well, you start 8 o'clock, and at 9:45 they'd bring you up in the tween deck to start loading wool, so that you'd never worked your 2 hours in the freezer and all this sort of business. You know what I mean? These little pinpricking things, and you had to make yourself heard. You wasn't a dog, like, you know.
Do you remember any example? I'm sorry.
Explain about the war effort, you know, all those attackers about the war effort. How many times have you done a ship or been on a ship that's waited all day for a load of wool?
Oh, like, it's unreal. You could sit there for 2 days and getting
back. Because they were all cost plus.
Yeah, and getting back to that, it was all cost plus.
What's that mean?
Well, that meant that the more labour they employed, the more money they got back was a backdrop from the government. And you'd finish up, you'd go down below, and you'd have 8 or 10 men down there when normally you'd only have six men, you know?
So they're putting on men they didn't need.
That's right.
Their cost to get their percentage on top of it.
And that's why some ships were laying idle.
And then at the same time if you made a fuss, they were saying, think of the war effort.
That's right, yeah. Yeah.
They weren't
saying
that to the employees.
Don't do as I do, do as I say, like.
They don't have a complete ship for anything from one day to 2 days for one load of wool. It's about 30 or 40 bales of wool. It was bloody ridiculous, wasn't it?
And would they be paying you for that?
We'd be standing by waiting.
Oh, yeah, but what we were getting was the ship owner would be getting three times as much because he was, it's only common sense, he'd have to be getting paid, he wouldn't be doing it.
What was the first stoppage that you can remember on the wharf, you know? Do you remember any special ones that you were involved? What's an example of that?
Oh, well, I think one of the biggest issues that was ever put on the wharf, it was the first early issue, was the double dumps, because they were inhuman, like, to ask anybody to try and top them up.
What was a double dump?
Well, that was a double, that was a single dump, like, doubled together, like,
what
you know?
Wool.
And you'd be lifting around about, instead of 250 pound, you'd be looking at something like 600 pound. And you'd find that there was in some gangs, there was members that had worked their guts out for years and they just couldn't do that type of thing. And they were expected to do it.
How many people were lifting it?
Well, you'd have, four aside. And you'd have four lifting the bale up.
You had to lift them up high to get them on top of the other bale.
That's right, double up, you'd put a row in and then you'd put another row on top. And they had to be jammed in. They used to use jacks and things like that to squeeze another one in, you know. And, there's been known of men getting on their backside and pushing in a bale of wool and dropping dead like that. Mm-hmm. Did happen at 8 Victoria Dock on one occasion.
Pushing it in with what, their feet?
Their feet, which is enormous
above
pressure.
No,
on the floor, in the tween deck,
Getting light pressure up floor. Against that table.
Put your back against something
and push
against
the wall.
Yeah.
Push it to get the bale in.
Now this was, this was interesting because in Kerry Greenwood's thesis you quoted that doctor of saying that, you know, the tremendous McQueen, this tremendous, premature aging in Warfies because of the terrible work they'd been doing. And he was amazed how much ill health there was on the wharf of men who were going on doing these sort of jobs.
Well, at one time it was quite a saying that probably the cream of Australia worked on the waterfront. You understand what I mean? This was in physical strength and fitness and things like that. That was said.
Yeah.
But
and you'd have to be pretty strong to do that sort of thing. As you say, people who were, and during the war, there weren't that many young people coming onto the wharf, were they? They were mostly older wharfies that had been there through the 30s.
That's right. And the point was this, Wendy, that if you were, you'd go down to Williamstown and you'd lump flour for 3 weeks or 4 weeks, and you mightn't go down there for another 12 months. And you could realise that you got away from a thing for, 6 months or something like that.
You got out of that knack.
That knack and routine of carrying things, like, you know. And of course, when you went down there, it was, if you was doing it all the time, it wouldn't be as hard as what would be if you was getting that. Right.
Hang on, just turn this over.